on episode 5 of A Duff Said.
I never really started playing lacrosse until I got to college. We didn't have the program or anything like that when I was young, so I learned on the fly.
When it comes to lacrosse and Chuck Virick, there's always been a learning curve.
I kind of said, I was like, I know I don't have a ton of coaching experience, but I'm very passionate, I'm very energetic, willing, powers, I guess, drank some of the Kool-Aid, I guess.
And ever since he got that first opportunity, Chuck Virick has been tasting success everywhere he has been as a lacrosse coach. And that is A Duff Said. This is episode 5 of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button. The lacrosse program at Grand Blanc High School has only been around since the early 2000s. But this year, the Bobcats had a winning season. They were 9-6, and they won their first ever playoff game on their home turf. Here to talk about all that is the first-year head coach of the Bobcats. Chuck Virick is my guest. Chuck, thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
You accomplished quite a bit in your first season at Grand Blanc, and now that you've had a few weeks to digest this past season, you guys were 9-6. What was your biggest takeaway from this season?
Oh, it was just kind of a whirlwind. It was a crazy, awesome fit how it came to be. I was very, very blessed to fall into it, but I guess the one thing that it made me was just really hungry. We had the first little taste of success, and I'm just loved it. And it just made me want to keep pushing and keep getting better. So I guess the thing that I am is just hungry. I want to keep going.
You've had a lot of success coaching lacrosse. You've been an assistant, you've been a head coach, and you pretty much have succeeded everywhere you've been. But when it all started, you really didn't have any experience at all being a head coach. So when the opportunity came about at Flint Powers, where this was your opportunity to really test the coaching waters, what was that conversation like when you told him, you know what, I've never really been a coach before, but I would really appreciate it if you gave me that shot?
It's kind of a leap of faith. I mean, I was right out of college, very young, still trying to get a teaching position and everything like that. And I kind of came in and I was like, I know I don't have a ton of coaching experience, but I'm very passionate, I'm very energetic, and I really feel that I can do a great job given the chance. And William Powers, I guess, drank some of the Kool-Aid, I guess, and I got the position at Powers, and that was the kickstart of my coaching career. It was right away the varsity head coach at Flint Powers.
And what was that experience like for you those first 2 years you were at Powers?
It was a very fun and crazy time, but I guess it was also some of the learning curves. Learning how to motivate guys, how to inspire and teach and, like, instruct guys, because not every player is the same. Not every player learns the same way. You got to find certain ways how you can communicate and interact with all of the players to get the most out of them. I started learning that there. But then I also realized myself, I was like, you got to keep getting better yourself, because there was times that we would play very good teams out like in the Catholic League or really tough, like talented teams and coaches who have seen some things. And, I mean, they all coached me. Like, the players weren't the thing. It was just the coaches. Literally, you had another step on me, and I had to take a step back and go, all right, if I really am going to get serious on this and continue to keep getting serious, I got to keep getting better myself. So Powers was a great kickstart to that. Made me hungry, made me wanted to keep pushing to get better. And we saw success. First ever, when I was there, we entered the Saginaw Valley Conference, in which Powers is in now. And we won a share of the Saginaw Valley title with Midland that year, the first ever one, for the Saginaw Valley.
And from there, you went on to coach the club program at Saginaw Valley. You had some success there, but you were telling me that that was the place where you also experienced a winless season. Now, you had a chance to experience victory at Flint Powers, but as you were going through that winless season, what did you learn about yourself as a head coach?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a gut check because, I mean, we had winning seasons all when I was at Powers. I mean, the first year I was at Saginaw Valley, we were very successful. We won a playoff game. We lost in the playoffs. So the next year we were like, all right, we're going to come back. We're going to go out there and we're going to do the same thing. And it didn't go that way. It was kind of that moment where it was, once again, still young in my career, it was looking at it going, well, look, you're not going to always win. You're going to have to work. And sometimes games don't fall your way. Like, there were some games that we lost, real close ball games. And it made me kind of go, all right, well, attention to detail, a little focus. We can change our outcome. But yeah, it was rough, but it didn't deter me. It just did. Yeah. If anything, I was like, all right, just got to get back to work.
So you're making your progression as a head coach. You told me your mindset was you just want to keep getting better and better at it. Well, that's when you get the opportunity to coach at the collegiate level. Alma College comes calling, wanting you to come join their staff. How thrilled were you to get that opportunity?
It was always a dream of mine to get a chance to coach in college. And it was happening, and honestly, it happened so fast that now as I've gotten a little older, I've taken a step back, and I truly feel like I'm blessed to get the opportunity and the chances that I have. And I met a guy over at Alma named Michael Kinney, and me and him connected and bonded, and he offered me a position to come on as the defensive coordinator over there. And I had never been, honestly, an assistant at the time. So I was kind of like, yeah, I may not be the head coach, but I'm going to learn a lot. Because he's been around, he's coached in college for numerous years, played in college himself. So I got a chance to not only work with him, but the other coach on his coaching staff, Adam Nitsch, who played in college too, was a high-level ball player and everything. I got to sit down every day and pretty much pick their brains on the cross, and we talked about it. And once again, like, always the constant pursuit of trying to get better. That was a huge step in the direction of working to get better.
Now, after serving a few years in Alma, you went back to the high school level. You took on a job as the head coach at Lapeer High School for a couple years, but you were always a resident of Grand Blanc. Grand Blanc is a powerhouse school in mid-Michigan. You know, people know about their football, basketball, and soccer programs. But from a personal standpoint, before you came on board at Grand Blanc, what was it about the job that made it so appealing?
One of the biggest things about it was that, like, I don't know, you kind of looked at the program and you look at the athletes and the history that's walking around and everything at the school. And it's always that analogy of, oh, what happens if I could wake this sleeping giant, this beast that it could be? And I had a lot of people that were very encouraging and everything like that. So, I mean, it also helps that I live in Grand Blanc, about to get married, actually. So I took that into account where I was like, I don't have as much driving to do anymore. I can actually be there with the family and everything. So when that opportunity opened up, I was like, I got to go for it. At least give it a shot to go out there and tackle this job opportunity.
When you arrived at Grand Blanc, what did you see as some things that needed to be done to make this program a winner?
Well, I mean, the guys that were there ahead of me did a great job starting to instill the basics and all that other stuff. They laid the groundwork. I don't know, like, it's kind of tough to say it because maybe it was just a fresh face, something different, and everything. But when I came in, one of the first things I wanted to do is I tackled the culture. I wanted to start to dive in and say, look, this is something that's very big. It's very rewarding, and I want you guys to be the first to start to change the tides. Because before I got there, the Grambling program has been around since 2004, so it's been around for about 16 years. And in the 16 years that the Grambling lacrosse program has been around, it only had, prior to this year, only had two winning seasons. So it was kind of like that aura, that fog of, yeah, they're talented, but they just don't win. It was a lot of, let's change that mindset. And, I mean, the ball players were there. It was just getting them to believe in it, that they can sit there and do great things.
Clearly the talent, like you said, was there. But, you know, anytime there's a new coach in town, you know, you're always going to have guys that are going to be used to the previous guy's style. So when you got a chance to actually sit down and talk to your guys, how did those initial conversations go? And how did they react to you and your coaching style in the beginning?
Well, I was pretty lucky because I knew a chunk of them already from summer program. I had worked with Momentum Lacrosse, which is based out of the Grambling Lansing area, and I've had the privilege of coaching a lot of those guys. So when I came in, I actually knew quite a few of them. So it wasn't so much getting them to buy into it, because they've already kind of know a little bit about me and what I want to bring and all that other stuff. It was trying to convince everything else. And one of the first things I did was I wanted to make sure that the seniors understood what I wanted and to get them to buy in, because the seniors are the guys that have did all this time, and to have a new coach come in there last year, and that can be really tough. So I really wanted to let the seniors know that I'm here to work for them. I'm going to help them out as best as I can to help them see success. And that was one of the first steps that I took.
Speaking of success, you guys won 5 out of the first 6 games that you played. How crucial was it for you guys to get off to that kind of start to the season?
When you can start seeing immediate success, I mean, everyone's going to get a little excited. And what one thing that I can definitely say that I learned from past experiences is that every win that you get, you can't take for granted. Because you never know when the next one may or may not come. So you got to kind of accept the wins and be grateful for them, but then always constantly be pushing to get better and stronger. So when we went and won the first 5 of 6, I mean, that was a great feeling, but we knew that we had some really tough games on our schedule coming up. So we didn't have a lot of time to sit there and be content with just being good. We wanted to keep chasing greatness.
And with that start, how much of that was the guys buying into your coaching style and the things that you wanted to get done? And how much of that was simply them knowing how to get the job done?
Well, I mean, for instance, I know it's kind of take a little of a weird route here, but when you first learn to do math, you don't jump right away into multiplication tables. You work addition, subtraction, little things like that. We kind of took it in baby steps. We implemented certain things. We made it so it wasn't super complicated, but each and every day, just like in the classroom or learning or something like that, we added a little bit more. Let's add this now. Let's put a little wrinkle to this offense. Let's change how we look at this on defense. And, so we always kept adding things and making it so that practice wasn't just a stalemate. It was something new every day, that when we walked in, it was something new. And the guys, like, rose to the challenge and learned a lot of film time, all that stuff, to try to get to those, keep grinding and keep getting better and everything like that.
I really like that analogy. I'm a big numbers guy when it comes to baseball. I don't necessarily look at guys when it comes to batting averages. I look more at the metrics, like the slugging percentages and the on-base percentages, and when you combine those two categories together into the ops category. It sounds like you brought a little bit of that strategy to your team, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we look at the numbers, but, I mean, it's so tough because high school lacrosse, well, one other thing that I have learned, too, is that what works well in college doesn't necessarily work well in high school because in college, you recruit the guys that fit the style of offense and everything that you want. In high school, it's what you got is what you got type of thing. So what I wanted to do with them is instead of trying to fit a square block into a circle block, I adapted the offense and our defensive philosophies and everything to what we have. So we adapt constantly to what we have to do. So we look at the numbers, but then we're not trying to force anything either. We're rolling with what we've got, and we make it work to the best of our ability.
Chuck Virick of the Grand Blanc boys lacrosse team joins us on A Duff Said. Now, speaking of some of the guys that you had on your team, like you said, you had a lot of senior leadership this year. Who were some of your biggest contributors this season?
I mean, if you actually look down the line of our offense and defense and everything, everyone had a huge part. We had multiple guys score a lot of goals or have games where some guys would step up and then other guys would step up the next game. But, I mean, some of our seniors really stepped up, like Colton Alexander, Nick Erlenbeck really stepped up, Parker Mako and Nett for us. I mean, we had Kevin LaHaye, who really stepped up as a senior, as well as Austin McDermott, who had, like, for instance, Austin McDermott and Nick Erlenbeck had never played lacrosse until their senior year. And they came on and became crucial pieces to what we were doing. And we just rolled with it. We took what we had and we just did what we got it to do. And we were very young. We had a lot of young ball players. I mean, at one point, like for instance, in the playoff game, we started 3 freshmen and 2 sophomores against like in the playoffs. And that's like unheard of in for a lot of teams. So it's kind of a pretty crazy cool moment to see that not only were the older guys contributing, but a lot of the younger guys as well.
Speaking of some of those guys that had never played before, what was it like to watch them when they took the field for the first time and actually got a taste of lacrosse?
Well, I mean, I get that feeling. I know what it's like because I never really started playing lacrosse until I got to college. They didn't have the program or anything like that when I was young. So I learned on the fly. So seeing them, and it was like, it's like that light bulb mentality where all of a sudden they start to get it and they start to understand and the light bulb clicks on and they go, aha, I get this. Now I like this, or I understand why this works now. So it's probably one of the best things. That's like a big reason why I love teaching in the manner that I do, is because it's when you get them to see what they're doing and they start to recognize and see the value of it, it's an awesome feeling.
You had mentioned that you never played until you got to college at Central Michigan. What was it that interested you in the sport of lacrosse?
Well, I mean, when I was younger, I was always playing sports. I mean, I was always outside playing basketball or football is the big one and everything like that. So it was always trying something new. So when I went to college, and it was kind of something where it was like, I want to keep doing something, but nothing was really here at the moment. So I was looking and I saw guys outside in the courtyard at Central Michigan playing lacrosse, throwing the ball back and forth to each other. And I was kind of like, all right, well, if I'm going to be in college, I might as well check it out and everything. So I went up and I asked the guys, I was like, how do you do this? So they sat down and they started practicing with me and helping me out. And I was like, I think I'm going to try this. I think the first time I told my parents, my mom was like, you're going to play what? And everything. And my dad was kind of like, really? Like, you're going to do that? And I was like, yeah, I want to try it. And
fell in love with it. Absolutely fell in love with it. I ate it up. Everything at that point, I was like, all right, I want to keep getting better.
One of your assistant coaches, Jason Lewis, is a friend of mine. And one time he and I were both on the sidelines. He was doing his job and I was doing mine. And he told me he played lacrosse. I didn't know that about him at the time. And plus, I didn't know he was one of your assistants. So he was kind of filling me in on the game and how things go about getting everything done on the field. And I was asking him, you know, what's it like when they, like, swing at you when you're trying to fight for the ball and you're getting hit by sticks and you got the ball flying all over the place? Good chance you're going to get hit by that. I guess I can ask this of you too. You know, what's it like when you get contact made when you're out on the field and suddenly you got guys swinging sticks at you and they're making hits and things like that?
Honestly, like being a spectator on the outside looking in, you're probably like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I would have handled getting hit. Like I know my dad says all the time, he goes, man, if I got hit like that, I'd probably start a fight. But I mean, getting in there, like, I don't know. It was kind of like you get hit and everything like that. It was just like how it like is in football. You just get used to it. You just roll with it. You just keep playing. I don't know. Maybe I'm a sucker for it or something, but like, if I ever took a really good shot or something like that, it was kind of like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, like you got you fired up type of thing. Like, I don't know, it was, you kind of rolled with it and you just used it to your advantage.
So let's get back to Grand Blanc now. We're talking with their head coach, Chuck Virick, here on A Duff Said. So when you get to the playoff game against Linden, you had gotten some of those tough games on the schedule out of the way, and some of those went your way. A few of them did not. As you went down the stretch and you played those tough opponents, how did that make you guys hungry and ready for what was in front of you when you guys hosted Linden?
Well, it was letting them know, be like, yeah, we may have lost to some of these really tough teams, but it was also the analogy of, like, look, we were right there. Yeah, we made mistakes, and they capitalized on it. That's what separates really good teams from decent teams. It's can you capitalize on the other team's mistakes? And as you start to play better and better ball, you start to recognize those. You start to capitalize on those moments. And when you start playing tougher teams like that, you're forced to do that because really good teams don't make a lot of mistakes. So when you see those moments, you got to capitalize on them, in which case we started to learn how to do. At the beginning of the year, it's, once again, it's kind of like the start of the school year type of thing. Like, you just constantly keep getting better every day, each a little bit. Then by the end of the year is the kind of the exam, in which is the playoffs, and it's, you got to keep trying to push it out to give your best so you excel. So that's why you want to play those tougher games. You don't want to just constantly have an easy schedule so you're not challenged. When you're not challenged, you're not focused. When you're not focused, you're not learning. So you got to challenge yourself.
Let's talk about the playoff game against Linden. Now, we talked about it earlier in the program. Grand Blanc Lacrosse has never really had much success in its brief history. And now you're on the brink of accomplishing something very special. You guys are hosting that game on your home turf. Grand Blanc Lacrosse has never won a playoff game on its home turf. So what were some of the conversations like leading up to that game, knowing that you guys were on the brink of accomplishing something very special for the program?
We really didn't try to hype up the fact that they could win their first ever home playoff game. Like, we kind of really just tried to tackle it as, look, all right, it's playoffs. It's win or go home. It's just do the thing that's in front of us, and that's play well. And so we try to have the mentality of just play the game. And everyone can get caught up into it. They look into the games and they look at the games as a spectator. Oh, look at this matchup. There's a huge rivalry and all that other stuff. At the end of the day, you got to look at the game as, we're going to go out there and we're going to play against another group of guys that's working just as hard, practicing on their offense, their defense, and everything like that. It's who can execute their stuff better than the other team. So when we rolled into the game with Linden, we really just tried to stay as focused as we can, and we really preached, play our style and our tempo of lacrosse.
And that you did. You guys won 14-5. After the game, you were doing an interview with me, and I kind of took a step back because I saw what was coming. The team doused you with the water bucket, and you guys had just accomplished something great. You just celebrated earlier before. In fact, you'd handed out some tag team championship belts. But when the guys gave you their little sort of like trophy for the win, when they doused you with the bucket, you know, what was that whole moment like? Just spending it with the guys that you've been with all season.
I mean, it was one of those things where you don't want to get doused with the ice bucket because it was pretty cold out. But at the same time, you love it too because those guys put in a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort. And to see them see the fruits of their labor, of all the hard work they did, to see the smiling faces and how pumped they are. If that means I got to take some cold ice bath or something like that, I guess I'll do it because it's an awesome feeling.
I also wanted to talk to you a little about the tag team belts. Was that a tradition that you started or was that something that had happened prior to you getting there?
That's something that I've kind of done for the last couple of years. I mean, I grew up a wrestling fan. I remember sitting down watching TV and always watching it. And I always thought it was fun and everything like that. It was just enjoyable. It was really enjoyable and fun to watch. And I always liked the whole idea of the tag team belts, two guys that went into battle, like, or in a contest or something like that. And hoist the belts. And, so I kind of rolling into it, I was like, you know, this could be a really fun little, just a fun and enjoyable nod to give to the guys as kind of like a little incentive and everything. And what we do is with the belts is we call them the tag team belts is we give it to the two guys who may not have, they don't have to necessarily score the most points or do all some of the other stuff, but it's just their play as like how they hustled, how they worked hard to get like either as separate or to help the team in general. That's what we look for when we dish out the belts. It's not so much who's got the best stats. It's who sometimes does the little things that the stats don't pick up. And we like rewarding that and showing that out because it's what we want to show the guys is that like, yes, the little things matter because the little things lead to the big things.
Who are the last holders of the championship belts when the season ended?
Parker Mako, my goalie, and I believe the other one was, I think Nick Erlenbach, actually a senior, two seniors.
And did they have to give those belts back or do they get to keep them until next season when the season starts all over again?
We let them hold on to them until the banquet, which is actually this upcoming Tuesday. So on Tuesday, they give the belts back. The belts kind of go back into waiting and everything like that until the next season. So,
how competitive was it to try to win those belts? Because obviously the overall goal is to get the dub, but in terms of winning the championship belts and knowing that you get to carry that around school or you get to keep it at home or wherever it was they took them afterwards, how competitive were those fights to get their hands on the belts?
I think it's kind of tough. Like, yeah, it was competitive and everything like that. But the guys learned that it wasn't about who could be the best on the stats. It was who's the better teammate, who could do the little things like passing and catching, running the offense, playing good defense, scooping ground balls, stuff like that, because those are the things that let down the belt. So that was contagious in the sense where guys were like constantly being good teammates to each other to try to get to those belts. And then the nice part and the best part too was is that if they didn't get the belt, they still cheered and got all like hoot and holler and everything like that for the guys that did get it. So that was a pretty cool feeling too, to see them cheer each other as teammates too when someone else got the belt.
So things are going great for you guys until the next game in the districts when you run into a very tough Midland team. And that, unfortunately, is where your season came to an end. But just looking at what you accomplished in just your first year as head coach, you had a winning season and you brought a winning attitude to Grand Blanc Lacrosse. What's the future looking like for this program?
Well, I mean, we were young, a new offense, new defense, new everything. Everything that came in was new. So when we come back next year, it's going to be a little less of the unknown. And now all of a sudden we know what's expected. Now we can get back to work and kind of pick up almost where we left off. We took some hard losses and stuff like that. And trust me when I say that next season is going to be tougher, because we're going to look to try to schedule some tougher teams. Because once again, we got to keep challenging ourselves, look to try to constantly get better. And so we know that the work's not done yet. We still got a lot to do, but it's exciting. Like, the guys are excited. I literally saw a chunk of them today, at the Grand Blanc had a little fair thing, and you know, it was a dunk tank, and I jumped in, and all the guys were out there running around throwing balls, trying to knock me in and everything like that. But
who was the one that successfully dunked you?
Oh man. His name's Ryan Lewis. He, was our goalie. He was a junior this year. He was playing baseball, and he ended up coming out for lacrosse. So it was his first year playing lacrosse. And he gets up, and man, this kid had a cannon. I think he dunked me probably at least 10 times. And he was just rifling the ball. It got to the point where I couldn't talk trash anymore because he was just dunking me so much.
So in essence, the goalie scored on you.
Oh, yeah. The goalie got some redemption.
And as far as lacrosse goes, I know you're big into that. That's been a hobby that you've had since college. But I want to talk a little bit about Chuck Virick, the man, because in addition to wrestling, you and I also share a common interest. You're a big Batman fan, just like I am. Just out of curiosity, who was your favorite all-time person that played Batman?
Oh, man, now you're really putting me on the spot. I think this might be a more difficult question than some of the other ones.
That's what I'm good for.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I grew up with the Michael Keaton version.
As did I.
I like the Michael Keaton version, but I love the Christian Bale version of Batman.
Same here. Now, how do you feel about Robert Pattinson as Batman? Did they do a good job with this one, or are you really skeptical?
I'm very skeptical. I cannot just see him as the Twilight glowing guy. So
exactly.
I'm keeping an open mind though, because I remember when they first released that they hired Heath Ledger as the Joker, everyone was going crazy saying that there's no way that he's going to do a great job. And he ended up delivering one of the overall best performances as a Joker character ever.
As it stands, he's the only comic book actor to win an Oscar for that performance.
Exactly. So, I mean, yes, I'm skeptical, but at the same time, I'm like, all right, you know what? Let's see how he does before we really make the final decision.
As long as it's better than Batman and Robin, I guess I'll be okay with it. That almost killed Batman for me. In fact, I had turned off Batman for a little while after the movie that came out in 97 with George Clooney. But Bale really won me back. And when I saw Batman Begins, it's like, okay, now I'm hooked. I can't wait for the next one. And I was kind of disappointed that they didn't bring him back for the Justice League and the Batman versus Superman movie. I was really hoping that Bale would return to reprise that role. But sooner or later, everybody has to pass the baton.
I mean, he did a great job with it. He ran with it, and he gave us three phenomenal movies for Batman. So, I mean, I get it. I get it. He had to roll on and do his thing, but yeah, he definitely left his mark
as a benchmark of what we look for in Batman.
He is Chuck Virick, the head coach of the Grand Blanc boys lacrosse team. They tasted success this year. They can't wait to get back on the field and build on that success a year from now. And Chuck, I can't wait to talk to you again next season. It's going to be very exciting.
Well, no, thank you very much for having me. It was a lot of fun to come on and to talk to you guys about everything. Well, I can't wait either.
And that's a wrap for episode 5, but keep an eye out for episode 6. That'll be dropping very soon. Until then, remember, if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what a Duff said.